Oh boy, you're about to hear me call this episode 150 of the podcast. That's how befuddled and just out of sorts I am with this Iowa offense and just with having to record this episode and finding something to talk about Iowa football for over an hour. And somehow Kevin and I did that. Frost got fired, so there's something to smile about, but let's try and have a day, all right? Let's go. Welcome into episode 150 of the podcast. I wasn't lying when I said that Drake wasn't going to show up. I suppose he wasn't lying, actually. I didn't say it. He said it. His decision. We're without Drake.
I guess we didn't really pry more on this. Is he just like done with the pod? Did he just not come to this one? Do you know what's going on here? Did we lose an R?
I think we have to address this first because I think all of the Walk-on Army wants to know. It is my understanding that he is done with the regular show Mondays and Thursdays during the season for this season.
Okay, then.
So now, interesting move, right? Interesting move because suppose all three of us decide to do that and then there's not a show anymore.
Now, question. Do people still continue to pay for the Patreon if there's no content?
Well, that's the thing. Is he is all about DHT and what we do on Tuesdays. And so for those that are on the Patreon, and I promise that this seems like a schemey move. I 100% promise that this is not a move of us trying to utilize the people who enjoy listening to Drake be Drake to get more money. This is a negative business move for the walk-ons, right? But Drake is, Kev, I don't even know how to describe Drake. He's an emotional guy, in a sense. He is a
he is definitely ruled by his.
I don't even know how to describe it.
It's not always logic that drives him. Is what I'm trying to say. He's not ruled by his emotions. Not so much emotions though.
I can't
just
pinpoint
the moods he gets in or something.
Right. There is a volatility to Drake that I'm not even sure that he has partial control over. And Kevin and Drake, if people want to know, Kevin and Drake do this show for fun. They don't take a dime from this show. Kevin's got a real job, real income. Drake has his situation. I'm the only one who makes money from this podcast. Like, this is part of my income. So for me, the reason I'm here every time and that I do, you know, effectively all of the work is because I'm the one who's, you know, like livelihood halfway depends on this. Now I have other stuff that I do, but this is part of what I do. So technically Drake and Kevin, they have more leeway of like, well, if I can't show up to the podcast or I don't want to, they're not really bound by anything to do so. Right. So should we be shunning Drake? Should we be, you know, down on Drake for not showing up, or should we be happy that, you know,
good to see him back out there?
Good to see him back out there. You know, I didn't have it turned up.
Yeah, but Kevin Ward, good to see him back out there.
Should we be happy that Kevin's here and we at least have one of the two? That might be the option because, to be honest, there's not much else to be happy about right now.
I've got one silver today.
Okay. Let's just do it. I don't have a roadmap for this episode. So let's start with your silver lining.
I went 3-0 in my picks.
Fuck. And we got to bring those up.
I believe you two gentlemen had slash guard.
Had a rough weekend. I didn't know Duke could play like that. I didn't know Duke could score the ball like that. Now, should I have assumed that Northwestern's defense was going to give up that many points? Probably. You know, probably. But Duke came out, and I thought they were going to blank them. I mean,
they came out slinging early, yeah.
And Ohio State, you know, you told me not to do it. against Kevin's better judgment. He said, oh my God, you're going to take that big line on the Buckeyes. I said, yeah, give it to me. Give me 44 and a half or whatever it was. And they couldn't do it. Now, granted, I don't think they were playing with Smith and Jigba, which he's one of the best players in the country this year. Does that make a difference? He's a dude. Your mic just switched over. I know you try to wiggle it and it just like doesn't work with you. And that's a clip. Nobody clip that. Try to wiggle it and then it doesn't work with you. I don't know. This episode right now is just going to shit. I'm distraught because there is not a lot to talk about tonight. Kevin and I are going to give our thoughts on Iowa State versus Iowa. For the first time since 2014, the trophy attached to that game is no longer in Iowa City. And that hurts. And I know it hurts Kevin to the bone.
Feels bad, man.
I tweeted this morning that it was a really weird vibe I had because I woke up and I went outside. My in-laws dropped the dog off. They went to Nebraska to see some family for the day. So they dropped their dog off. So I'm taking the dog for a walk. It's a beautiful Sunday morning in Waukee. Sun is shining. Birds are chirping. And I'm like, damn, it's a good day. You know, like I feel good. I run on sunlight, so it makes me happy. Vitamin D. And then I'm thinking to myself, 5 years ago, it could have been this exact same day, and I would have been feeling a whole lot different. A whole lot different. And it was a sense of, in some way, Kev, we've got it easy now, right? We can wake up and we don't have to care. There's no responsibility on our shoulders. Nothing we do in our daily life is going to affect the results of the Iowa football team anymore. The weight has been lifted, right? Heavy is, how does it go? Heavy is the
crown. Heavy is the head that wears the
crown. Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Not sure that applies in this.
A little bit. I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, but you know, if the crown is being a part of the program and the opportunity of being a Division I football player, you got to take the, you know, you are responsible for the highs and the lows. And those boys waking up today, I mean, is there any way to describe what the vibe is like in that facility on a Sunday morning like today?
Oof.
Funeral?
Quite frankly, you know, I've been to several funerals in my lifetime. There are funerals that are more lively with happier people. You will find the Sunday morning rolling into the complex after your state rival.
I would liken it to, it's so somber. And I also don't want to upplay this in a way that like creates a faulty picture because the motivation and
it's not feeling sorry for yourself.
No,
right?
No, it's not.
It's just like, there's not a happy soul in the building.
Correct.
So just imagine like, oh man, imagine like you're going to like a 7:30 class down the business building for lecture. You have to be there. There's a clicker question every 5 minutes and absolutely no one wants to be there. And everyone's pissed off about having to be there. And
there's a clicker.
It's going to be as quiet as that. Basically no one. It's a bunch of people who are just very unhappy with themselves.
No, Kev, it's this one. Ready? It's you don't normally go to class. God damn it, your attendance rate is really starting to hurt your grade. So you decide, you know what? I'm going to the 7:30 a.m. today, right? I have to. It's Monday. I'm tired as hell. You're hungover, and you know there's going to be clicker questions. But you get to the building, and you sit down at your seat, and you realize, oh, no, I forgot my clicker. And now you've attended the class, but you're not even going to get points. And you're sitting there hoping that somebody potentially, just to cause some excitement, rolls a grenade into the bottom of that classroom.
Basically, yeah, it's 150 people in the building I wouldn't say they don't want to be there. That's probably wasn't the best example. Just very unhappy people.
It's almost
unhappy with themselves.
You're so disappointed in God. And I know this is what this podcast is for. I know you a lot of you come to this show to listen to the inside perspective and to hear exactly what it's like. So I want to take time on this. The way that not just Iowa, but probably a lot of football programs are, is those coaches, and they do it so well at Iowa, and the special teams is such a great example. And we're going to get to LeVar because there isn't enough pockets for him to stuff all the money that he's making himself into. Those coaches have a job. They need to coach football, right? Some of them coach the linebackers, the et cetera, whatever. Like, they all have their positions. But there's a secondary lineup of responsibilities for those coaches. And it's to create a culture, to create relationships, to foster both culture and relationships, and to get the guys on the squad to buy in to the mission, whatever that mission is, right? It's similar to a business. You know, what's your mission statement? What are your morals, the values that this company holds? And that's the same thing as the Iowa football program. And the Iowa coaches do it so well that those guys, and you've heard us talk about it, they don't care if they start on offense or defense. A lot of them, when they come to the program, they are chomping at the bit just to be on punt team, just to be on kickoff. The coaches demonstrate the value of what those special teams positions mean so much that those guys will fight and die in camp and give effort to just get one of those special team spots. And it's very similar to that. That's a sort of a smaller example of the overall buy-in to the team of the coaches and the staff and the way that program is run. It makes you feel, whether it's true or not, because in reality, Jack Campbell's worth to that football team is a whole lot more than the second string long snappers is, right? But they find a way to make every single guy in the program feel like they matter, to the point where if they don't do their job on a daily basis, the football team will suffer. And so when you come in on a Sunday morning and you lost by 3 and the trophy went home to Ames, every single guy in the building, including staff, feels like they didn't do their job. And you almost have a hard time looking each other in the eyes. It's almost to that point. Like, damn, I failed Kevin. I failed Drake. I failed KF. I failed the coaches. Something that I did last week wasn't good enough. And then you all sit down and it's fucking accountability hour. You're going to throw it up on the tape, on the film, and you have to watch it happen. It's an environment that most people don't.
It's a big old group therapy session, basically.
It is. It's, yeah.
You're gonna put the problems right there on the film. Film don't lie. You're going to address it, try to correct it. And the hardest thing to do at the end of the day is, after we've watched that film, is to try to flush it, because practice starts to game.
And you're moving on.
Yeah. There's nothing more you can do after you've watched the film, address the mistake. What could we have done differently?
And honestly, Kev.
And then move on to the next game.
Unemotionally, right? Because if you carry the emotion of, fuck, I'm so pissed that we lost to Iowa State, now it's going to affect Nevada, right? In a certain way. I mean, you want to take good emotion with it, like, hey, this is motivating us to get better. But, and it's why college sports, especially at the Division I level, where you have 70,000 fans who are booing a guy, you have dozens of thousands of more people on Twitter trashing basically everybody in the program outside of the defense and the special teams. That accountability to go in and just face your problems head on. If a lot of companies did that, Kev, and I'm sure a lot do in a sense, companies would be a whole lot more productive and would deal with a whole lot less bullshit. Because they just attack the bad stuff head on and work to move forward and correct the ship. But, it's definitely sad. I just think of Scooby-Doo when they're, I know, and that's a great transition.
I can't wait to see where this goes.
Do you remember this, the episode of Scooby-Doo where they're like, I don't know if they're like by a boatyard or they're by some like weird building and it's foggy out and they can cut the fog with a knife?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then Scooby like takes a bite of the fog, I think.
Yeah, that he cuts it like in the shape of a donut.
Yep. That is the vibe. Like you can cut the air in the complex knife. It feels like that. So hopefully that paints a picture. Maybe it makes you go back and watch an episode of Scooby-Doo, and maybe that's what you need to cheer yourself up this week.
It's actually not a bad idea, man. It's not
watch a little Scooby-Doo.
Watch a little Scooby.
That is what, and so take that as you will, but, and I don't think anybody is at this point, but if you're sitting there thinking mad at this football team or upset with this football team because it's ruining your life because the Hawks aren't, you know, they didn't win the Cy-Hawk this year. Get over yourself, because I promise those guys in the building care 400 times more than you do. They're putting in a full effort every second of their day to be the best they possibly can. And just live your life. There's more to life than football for you guys out there, but not for these guys, because it literally is their every day. Let's quickly go to Kev, the three bets of the weekend for you, and just wrap that up real quick.
Started off the day with Arkansas -8 versus South Carolina. KJ Jefferson and the Missouri Razorbacks put up 44-30, so they cover there.
Are they pretty good?
I think Arkansas is gonna be a good team this year.
Yeah.
And in the afternoon slot, obviously we had the Iowa State 3.5. Doesn't matter what line you got it at. That was not exactly obvious in the first 2 minutes of the game, but about 8 minutes into the game, you knew that this thing was going under. And then had the under on 68, Michigan and Hawaii. A little nervous towards the end there. Michigan was scoring a lot of points, but ended up staying under at 60.
Wow, that one got a little close, huh? Got a little hairy.
It was like 42-0 at halftime. And my general thesis was that Hawaii was not going to score. And I was like, does Michigan put up 70? Probably not. You know, if they did, I would have been fine with losing, but we ended up squeaking. Good old 3-0 for winners right there. Kluve, I believe you went 0-2-1.
Yep. So
Northwestern Carolina, gets beat outright.
North Carolina won by 7 exactly, 35-28. Ohio State kind of messed around with.
Didn't look too sharp in the first half.
No. I think it was Arkansas State. But they handled their business in the second half. Regardless, it doesn't climb to the massive line of 44.5. And Northwestern, who was a damn near 10-point favorite, loses outright and pretty handily. So that was a miss as well.
All of Drake's games have officially gone final. Drake went 0-3 on the weekend. Started off on Thursday night with the Rams +2.5. They give up a boatload of points to Josh Allen and the Bills,
who look unbelievable.
With Von Miller on that defense, man, they are going to be a hard team to beat, a damn hard team. He had the Cardinals +6. Patrick Mahomes is still Patrick Mahomes, even without Tyreek Hill. They put up 44.
Crushing
21.
Them.
So no help there from the point. And then he had the Raiders +4. They end up losing by 5, 2014.
They played the Chargers?
Chargers.
I think both those teams will be decent, but yeah, so horrible week for Drake and I to start, but hey, it's Ward's winners for a reason. And the guy went 3-0. You bet with Kevin. If you want to be on the show and you want to make money, you bet with Kevin, especially when we get into the Big Ten slate, because Kevin, his specialty is Big Ten football, right? He's pretty good at it. He's had a significantly good Big Ten winning margin over the last couple of years since we started doing this.
Last year was actually a really off year for me, but previous several years.
2 years ago, you were hitting like parlay, or no, 3 years ago when we started it, you hit like.
When you first started, I went like, I think I hit a parlay 8 out of 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Something stupid.
Yeah. You were, the books were trying to find you and hunt you down. So that's the wrap up of that. Whoa, wait a second. It's your favorite host, Tyler, popping in to give you an ad read. Hey, if you didn't know by now, DRF sponsors our podcast. And if you didn't know, well, then you must be living with Puxatani Phil in a hole somewhere, because DRF is the official title sponsor of the Washed Up Walk-Ons. If you haven't seen, and I just realized we didn't even go over the walk-on boost of the week from last week, which didn't hit, but you can get boosted odds on a specific bet that DRF is allowing us to boost each week. It's DRF times Washed Up Walk-Ons, the collab, and it's happening every single week. Don't miss out on the action on DRF Sportsbook, ia.drf.com. They're the best. They're Iowa Sportsbook. They're going to make you some money this fall and year-round, and they're our boys. Shout out to them. We love you. Also want to give a quick shout out to the team at AdCraft. I always want to say AdCraft Solutions. That's not their name, but they do have solutions if you have problems, specifically custom merchandising problems. The boys, if you got in on it, and I don't know how many of you did, as I record this ad, I'm currently wearing the Stranger Things Washed Up Walk-Ons edition baseball tee. It's pretty snazzy. I was pretty proud of this design. I said, hey, Stranger Things is popular. I think a lot of people like it. I think a lot of people like the Washed Up Walk-Ons. Let's do a little mix-up of that. And in about an hour, they had a design that looked absolutely fantastic. The shirts are soft. They fit incredible. They fit to size. They have all of your custom merchandising needs. If you want to be repping some of the best merch in the game and be connected to some of the best people in the game and potentially make your own money selling your own designs or just helping out a team or a group of people that needs to look put together and snazzy and comfy, then find the people at adcraftwebstores.com. They can help you out with every single part of the process and you will not be dissatisfied. You've got the walk-on promise. Shout out to AdCraft. All right. Let's get into this. I was at the game. Kevin was not.
Was not.
Would you have rather been there and watched them lose, or did for this one in hindsight, were you glad you weren't there?
It's a good question, honestly. There would be some points that would be I'd feel uncomfortable being.
And I can confirm that.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't. I could just walk away from the TV when knew the kick was no good. I can just walk away. I don't have to see Iowa State go rush, take the trophy. I'm glad I didn't have to see that. Glad I didn't have to hear any jarring from any Iowa State fans around. But overall, yeah, I would have loved it. All right. It's still
always
awesome,
a good
matchup.
Time.
Great energy. Despite the play, it was a close game. So that makes it exciting. Yeah. I would have liked to have been able to.
Yeah. Okay. That's how I feel as well. I thought regardless, and this might just be me and you, and the connection of playing there and knowing, you know, and how special Kinnick is to us. Anytime I get to see a football game or be a part of a football game in Kinnick Stadium, I'm going to take it. Like it just is the way it is. After last week, you might've thought to yourself, you, the proverbial you, the listener, us, anybody around the country might have watched the Iowa South Dakota State game and thought, well, that was really bad offensively, but how could it get any worse? And the answer would be by about 14 yards.
14 yards and an extra turnover and having the ball for about eight less minutes.
So let's not ask ourselves that question. Because I don't want to know if it could get worse than that against Nevada, who we will get to as a preview. And here we go with the fucking ads. Jesus. Kevin, we don't have an offense. I mean, we don't have an off. I mean, there's 131 teams. Let's start here. There's 131 teams. I thought there was 128. Somehow we got another three. There's 131 teams in Division I football. And I have it pulled up here, both total offense, total defense rankings for the entire 131 teams. We will talk about some of these stats, but the first one we're going to talk about is that Iowa is dead last, 131st in total offense, and it's not even close. 130th is averaging 232 yards per game. That's Colorado State. Boston College just above them at 233. So 232 is the floor for every team in the country through two or three games, except for your Iowa Hawkeyes, who are 33% beneath that at 158 yards even per game. It's almost hard to do that unless you're trying.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, Kevin, it's...
Think about this year. We had complaints about the offense last year.
Yep.
Year before it. Last year, they were statistically twice as good as this year.
As they are so far this year.
Yeah.
303 yards a game or something like that.
Right, right.
Which...
last year's offense, we win that game by two touchdowns.
Oh, yeah. This Iowa, against this Iowa State team?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to put that in perspective, so Kevin's mentioning our yards per game offensively from 2021, 303.
Which is not good.
Which is bad. That would put us right now this year only 13 spots higher at 116th in the country. So if you other than the bottom 15 teams in the country, every team is averaging 310 yards or more, at least, per game. Iowa's averaging half of them. That is how bad they are, even compared to the worst, the bottom 20%. It is something that is almost mystical. It is unfathomable. And in my opinion, it is not just a quarterback issue. It is not just an O-line issue. It is not just a coordinator issue. It is not just a injury receiver issue. It's in everything, right?
There's no one single fix to this. I mean, I think we talked about it after the state game. There's no one single fix to this problem. I don't think there's even two or three.
And so if you're sitting there wondering as the listener, well, what do we have? Because I think, Kev, I don't want to place even most of you in this category, but there's definitely some people out there who fall into the average fan category, right? They're just a person who lives in Iowa. They're not a huge football fan, but they watch the games, especially if Iowa and Iowa State playing, and they would think, well, what's the problem here? What's the problem here? If we could fix one thing and fix this, what would it be? And the answer is, you're not going to do it. There is no one fix.
There is no one single fix, right? You know, and I think I saw Kirk answer a question somewhat similar of, kind of a question. You're like, you know, what any plans to change? Is like, no, I don't think we can change. I think we just have to be better at what we do.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Which is honestly, Kev, it's not good, because to get a little bit better, sure. We always used to talk about, hey, the teams who will be the best at the end of the season will be the ones who improve incrementally on that slight edge principle as the season goes on. The problem is if you're this far behind early in the season, even if you make drastic improvements, you're looking at still not a great place of where you end up 12 weeks later. We cannot score. The 7 points that we got in week one were two safeties and a field goal. That's all special teams and defense. The 7 points we got in week two were off of, you know, give those to the defense. Yes, the offense scored. It was 16 yards that they had to gain from where they got the ball. And we are effectively a zero offense, but we cannot score the football. And we should have had another touchdown. I don't know if Monty got in or not. It doesn't matter, because the refs decided that he didn't before he fumbled that ball. You can sit there and say that was the deciding factor in the game. And if you isolate that one play, sure. If we go in on that thing, yeah, it's 14-10. Iowa wins. It's 8 years in a row. But you could say the same thing about Jireel Brock fumbling as he goes over the goal line. And now we just trade that 7-for-7 and it's 17-14 and we lose. Right. So you can't play the what-if game. And to be quite honest, Kevin, if we would have won that game, there would have been some part of me that felt like we didn't deserve to.
Oh God, no, we didn't deserve. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that Iowa State played well.
They didn't.
Iowa State tried game. To lose the game.
The only thing they
we
did,
just didn't let them. Basically. Right.
The only thing they did to deserve a win was a really, really nice 99-yard drive, which
they yeah exactly
was aided by a questionable late hit out of bounds call and a call that could have gone either way in the end zone where Riley's kind of got pushed off of, you know, he definitely tripped, but I think he got pushed off of a little bit. You could have gone either way there. But give it to him, right? That's, to be on their own 1 yard line after we fumbled and to go 99 yards and put that drive together. In reality, Deckers and their passing game, the ability to dink and dunk was the difference. We can't do that offensively and they can. And this isn't an Iowa State show, obviously. You can see me wearing the Washed Up Walk-Ons merch in the black and gold, by the way. This is the Stranger Things edition. Kind of feels like the Iowa offense is somewhere in the upside down right now, for any of those who watch and get that joke. But I don't know if I'm Iowa State, if I feel great about the team either.
No, I mean, they had two punts blocked. They turned the ball over three other times, twice in the red zone.
Good to see the defense get some turnovers, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're going to need those.
Yeah. So I can't exactly call them forced turnovers.
Sure.
Kayvon was able to get his hand on the ball as they're diving over the goal. The one interception, Deckers is just trying to force it in. And then the other one, I'm pretty sure is a miscommunication about what's to sit down.
I think he ran the wrong route.
He kept going through. Therefore, Terry was able to come up with that one. So I think it was more, sometimes good things happen to you because the other team's bad. Sometimes good things happen to you because that.
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit more of former.
For the turnovers, for sure.
The punch box.
Add two more. Essentially, you can call it a 5-turnover game for the Iowa State.
Right.
Because Lucas Van Ness is trying to do it all. My guy, and this is going to be our, and maybe hopefully you agree with me, and maybe Drake will agree with me or anybody. I got shit from Brady Ross. I got shit from the entire group chat about this one. Obviously, I was being a little bit funny and entertaining last week with the Luke Elkin long snapper play of the week. But this week's count the kicks special teams play of the game is Van Ness putting the team on his back and trying to win this thing with not one but two punt blocks.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And, I think there's some crazy stat out there that if you block a punt, you're like 90% chance to win the game. I don't want to know what the odds are of losing the game with punts.
You and I are on the exact same wavelength because I was going to ask you, how many times do you think a team has blocked two punts and lost the game?
I just said I don't want to know. I know it's not good, though.
And then on top of that, if you could somehow, I don't know if there's a way to like pull tab, like find this out from a database, but how many times has a team blocked two punts and gotten three other turnovers and lost the game? I would bet that it's never happened until Saturday. It's probably that unlikely.
Yeah. And it goes over to, your offense not being able to catch. Now, granted, some of our turnovers were, again, in our own red zone. So they're preventing points. They didn't have the opportunity to set up points. But one punt we got on the 20-yard line. I think the other one we got like just inside the 20. Terry's pick was the plus 40-ish area of the field. Yep. All three of those should turn into points. We were able to get one in. We blocked the first punt of the game. We score in two running plays. I'm like, oh, we might be able to run the ball today.
Yep.
We're going to be great if we can run the ball today.
Yep.
And those dreams soon died thereafter. Second time it happens, it's in the third quarter, and I'm sitting with my dad. We're at a bar because I had one of my best buddies' weddings back home in Chicago, and so we
had to
watch.
How was the wedding, by the way?
It was a good wedding. I would have been in a much better mood if we had won.
Sure.
So we couldn't hear any volume or anything, but I could tell when fans were pretty upset. But anyway, we blocked the second punt. It's like halfway through the third quarter or something like that.
Yep.
And I'm thinking to myself, Wouldn't mind it if we just need it three times and kick the field goal.
Yeah.
What happens? Well, first off, we should have scored a touchdown. Aaron Bruce slips and falls. I get it. It was rainy. It was slick out there. But
harder than it looks to keep your feet out there in Kinnick Stadium. I would know.
That's one that's got – it's got to be a touchdown. It's got to be a touchdown.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously there's that controversial call of was he across the goal line or wasn't he? Honestly, it shouldn't even be – it shouldn't even be a question. Just hold on to the damn ball. You're a fullback, okay? You're not making anyone miss. Everyone, you know, knows that it's coming right up the middle. Keep two hands on the damn ball. If you're short, okay, it's fine. We can live to play another down.
Yeah.
There's no reason that you should only have one hand on the ball. There should be absolutely no reason that ball gets fumbled and there's even any room for doubt.
And I respect the effort.
And I'm just sitting there just like devastated. I'm fine with the call standing as it was called on the field. I think it was very close. Maybe if you would ask me, yeah, I think he probably did get across, but you shouldn't even leave it up to question. There's absolutely no excuse for fumbling the ball.
Agreed. As you were kind of talking there, I was trying to find the record for the worst, and you'd probably have to like cap it in the 1970s or after World War II or something, because back in Niles days, they literally, a game like this would have been right up their alley, right? Like this would have been. I was trying to find the record for the worst offense in college football history relative to total yardage, because I would bet that we are on. Now, is it going to get better? You would hope so, right? But I can't tell you that it is for sure.
You'd hope so, right?
Here's where we're at, Kev, because I don't know how much else of the game we need to break down. There's not a lot to break down. If you want, I guess there is one question. The defense played fucking amazing, especially when you're asked to go play for 40 minutes. Okay. That's a overlooked
38 minutes to 38:15 to 21:45 time possession.
That matters, right?
That matters. You know, and that's not all on the offense though. I mean, obviously the offense not being able to sustain drives, not good. Giving up a 12-minute 99-yard
bad
drive, that's on you, right? It's not the offense's fault. You get literally the entire field make a stop at some point.
And that's where I was coming around to is there was questions on the radio show that I did post game last night. There was questions on Twitter. What can we do, if anything, during that one drive? What has to change? And again, this is not asking this question is not saying, man, if the defense would have just stopped them this one time, because again, 10 points, that's pretty good. Break down some of that drive and if you saw it at least. And I think, you know, the third down completion percentage for them on that drive was perfect, obviously, which hurts. And I know you talk about that a lot. If you can't get off the field on third down, you're fucked.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you win, right? You got to, as good as your defense might be, you don't win with your defense on it.
Yeah.
Right. You got to get off the field. I think overall in the game, we were 10 of 20 on third down, which is not good from a defensive.
What in Phil Parker's defense are we looking for percentage wise?
We want to get off the field at least 60% of the time.
So two out of three third downs, we're looking for a stop.
Right. Exactly. Okay. I mean, the way that we're built on defense is inside and in front, we give up short passes, rally to the football. Very rarely can teams sustain drives like that, right?
Yep.
They were able to do that, but they were also able to do it a few times. They just had better execution, right? Yep. Their guy just beat our guy. And there are a few times where we kind of made it easy on it.
Sure.
So I think about, a couple of chunk running plays. There's a D lineman who's he gets beat. He's not heavy in his gap. He's kind of favoring to one gap. Opens up a seam. There's that. Like,
I've got the whole drive pulled up right here.
I think it was a key third down. It was like a third and seven or something like that.
if this helps them.
It's right around midfield. We bring our safety down into the box, and he's the robber.
Yep.
And he's staring at the quarterback. He finds Hutchinson 5 yards to his left. He's got to be looking around for the receivers, especially crossing receivers.
Right here. Yeah. 3rd and 3 at the Iowa 40. Decker's pass complete to Xavier Hutchinson for 5 yards.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a safety, you know you're dropping down. You know who he likes to go to. I think they threw half the time to Hutchinson. I think
he's their guy.
Half the targets. No worries that head on a swivel looking for crossers. You got to be able to anticipate. That penalty is a crap penalty. But again, you have to be able to play at the speed that you need to play to make plays. But at the same time, you got to be able to know. We're playing 2022 football now. We're not playing early 2000s, 90s.
Yep.
Tic-tacky flags are part of the game now.
And Cooper had a hell of a game too.
Cooper had a good game. They found a little bit of weakness. If you notice, they were doing a lot of their formation strength into the sideline.
Yep.
What that does is that brings if we have a cash player, that brings him into the box.
Yep.
Now he's got to play in the run game. Which, he's not big and physical like Jacobs is, right?
Right.
So he's a young guy. He can get to it, but there were some plays right there where, you know, we were wanting for a little extra in the box.
Could he use some more Iowa corn? I think they talked about
it. And there are a few missed tackles here and there. I mean, they played good. Okay. Let's be honest. They gave up 313 yards. I don't think they gave up any big plays. 3 yards per rush. You know, my critiques are you got to get off on third down. Their passing percentage. Oh, other than that, you know, good game. The touchdown, I think Riley just kind of tripped over his own feet.
Slipped a little bit in the moist.
Yeah, I mean on TV, yeah, there's a little bit of push, but it wasn't egregious, and I'm okay with the no call. That's just one that Riley got beat on. He got beat on by a good player. It happens. Their guys are on scholarship too.
You're telling me they're trying to win?
Believe it or not, the opposing team's players also get scholarships. They also get NIL deals. Their other coaches are also paid millions of dollars. So.
Hey, that might be a good segue. Because somebody got paid to not coach today.
Someone got paid to not coach.
Let's wrap up the Iowa State, and then we're going to finish with that, and we'll move on. So, final thoughts. Here's my final question to you. Or maybe it's more of a posed topic to both of us, because I'm not even sure what I think yet. And this starts to get into a little bit of a dicey territory, because this is where, as former players of these coaches, quite honestly, it takes an extra step for me in my thinking process to not be clouded in judgment, because I trust and I love every coach on that staff, at least the ones that I played for. I'm going to imagine that Betts and Jay Neiman and the other coaches are very similar to the ones that I'm talking about. The biggest thing that you can change is the quarterback, right? Spencer is not, I'm Tyler Kluver, not the Wash Up Walk-On's opinion, but Tyler Kluver's opinion is, at this point, I'm pretty okay with saying that Spencer isn't going to be the guy, and we're not going to miss out on taking him out of the game on some miraculous performance or ability. Because he would have showed that by now. That's not saying that I think Padilla is the answer and that we're going to start, you know, putting up 400 yards of offense a game either when Alex comes in or Joey Labia comes in. Or Labus. I actually did not mean to say Labia. Fucking Drake is still in this show somehow. Oh my God, I can't believe that. I'm so sorry, Joey. I really did not mean to say that. Labus. They're not the answer either. Right, this isn't a one solution problem. How does Coach Ferentz and Brian not change when it's this bad? You know, I think a lot of people thought that it was Padilla's time in the second half of that game the other day. And you know what? Maybe this is 6 days too early, and maybe we come out against Nevada this weekend and they're going to try Alex, right? But Coach Ferentz isn't dumb. They're last in the country. And the scheme, Kev, is outdated. People know how to play it. And when you can't run the ball, which is what Iowa has leaned on to set up play action and any sort of pass game that we've had in the past, they can absolutely stack the box and make it exponentially worse. How do you not go some other direct? Like,
well, so here's the thing with that. When we talked about it earlier, there's no single fix. I mean, but to get them to stop stacking the box, spread it out and toss it around, play backyard football and let's air it out a little bit. Our receiving room is
weak right now,
leaving just as much to be desired as our offensive line room.
100%. 100%. Maybe more.
You know, in man-to-man coverage, we struggle to get separation.
In fact, Kev, I thought the offensive line played a lot better.
The offensive line in pass protection played, they improved. I wouldn't say they played good by any means, but they played well enough. Well enough for us to make some plays that just didn't happen.
Yep.
You know, overthrown balls. There are a handful of drops too. And I get it. It was slick out there. It was rainy. But there were a couple of critical drops. And when you have a quarterback that's struggling, just absolutely cannot drop the football. When we're struggling to sustain drives, we cannot drop third downs. We cannot drop key passes over the middle. When you finally get one right at your face. And I get it, man. It's tough. It's slick out there. But hey, you're on scholarship.
Right.
You're getting paid now. You're expected to perform at a Big Ten level. And I can't say that there's anyone on that offense at a Big Ten level.
I think the thing with the quarterback and giving Padilla or Labus a chance is, hey, it can't get any worse. And clearly Petrus isn't doing anything great for us. So why not try something different just out of principle, just to explore the option, just because it's something we can do.
I'm not against it by any means. Like I said, there's several balls that from Petrus that are overthrown.
Yep.
A couple that are forced into double coverage. You know, he keys in on Laporta, even when he's not open sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's tough to watch.
Here's a question.
So I'm okay if you tried out Alex Padilla out there.
Here's my final question on that for now. Fucking talk about this all year, so it's not like we need to exhaust ourselves on it right now. And this is not a question that you know, because I know that you weren't in on these either. I wasn't in on them. Specifically, what I'm talking about is offensive meetings, coaches meetings, staff meetings. I'm not inside Coach Kirk's brain or Coach Brian's brain, but I want any sort of opinion on how much do you think KF gives Brian directive wise? The whole
no idea. I honestly have no idea. Couldn't tell you. I am as speculative as any regular fan in that.
Yeah.
Matter.
And I am too. I think, in my opinion, I'm starting to think that if Brian had full 100% control of the exact offense that he wanted to run, it would not look like it looks. I think that the head man, rightfully so, because he's the fucking king of the, like, he is Captain KF. He has the final say on what the philosophy of Iowa football offense is. And you can say that Iowa football wins a certain way and that KF wins his way. But when you look at it objectively in the stats, all the way back to when we were in 2015, the highest our offense got was ranked 54th in the country out of 120 teams. So basically right there in the center, that's the highest we ever were with CJ and George. And when we scored a bunch of points that felt like a bunch of points for us, it was dead center of the country. And since then, we've been like 80th, 82nd, 90th, 96th, 121st, and now we're dead last in the country. It's objectively just facts that this offense, blame the personnel or blame the system, or probably both, because that's what it is. The system has to evolve. Like it just does. And here's what I'm worried about. KF is from the 80s, man. I don't know if he is willing enough to like really go in an off season. Cause he's not going to do it mid season. I don't know if he's willing to like really open his mind and be like, yeah, 23 years in, it's KF 3.0. We're going to the spread. Like, I don't
mean, know. I believe that we could, you know, a lot of the plays out of spread offenses are really that much different than how we run them just out of different formations.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
As far as a run scheme goes, like when you see teams in spread offenses, when they're running the ball, they're running a zone.
Right.
They're running zone plays 80% of the time.
Sure.
That's what Iowa's running scheme is. We're almost 80% zone schemes.
I guess it's more so in the passing game.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, when we get in our like third and long passing sets, same formations that you see of any spread team.
Something's different, though.
You're just not executing.
Then I guess it's personnel. I'm not good enough to really diagnose the – again, I think it's probably multiple issues, but something's not.
Of course. You're right. I believe that the offensive staff, whoever's making the decisions, okay, Kirk, Brian, whatever.
Collective, probably.
Collective believes that when you perform the scheme – as it's drawn out right now to its perfection, it is the best way to win because it helps you on the other side of the ball as well.
Yeah.
The problem is for the last couple of years, we have not been able to
execute
at the level needed to win Big Ten championships. Now we went to the Big Ten championship last year. That was on the back of a lot of turnovers from the defense.
Shitload.
Really good.
I agree with you on.
Now, I think if you look back at that 2015 offense, it's better than that 54 shows. I think you have to look more so at like offensive efficiency than just total offense.
Sure. But you,
because we slow down the game, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you score 30 points, but your offense is on the field for 20 minutes and then your defense is giving up 30 points, right?
You're right. You're right.
You want to play 30-30 games or you want to play 10-7 games, all right, man? But it's a three-point game either way.
No. And I fully understand that when KF's looking at it this as a two-part problem, right? Where you have the offense and the defense, and it's you're meshing two styles together that can mix and help each other out. I think the way other people see it as, and the potential way that I see it as too, is well, why can't we suffocate people on defense and still play the defensive style that we do and the special teams and run a more high powered, exciting offense? Like, cause there's no doubt. I don't care if you're mostly in the same sets or mostly in the same formations, you're running mostly the same plays. There is absolutely no doubt about it. I'm not smart enough to tell you the nuance of it, but there's no doubt about it that if you look at the Chiefs offense or the Rams offense or some of these spread offenses that have pre-snap motions all over the place and they're running different route trees, that their offense is different than our offense, right? There is.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that just comes down to play design, really.
Yeah. Right. And I think so that's probably the answer we're looking for is we need better play design. We can stick to our greater philosophy, but we got to find a better way to get there. And especially if you have a lack of talent, which right now we do, whether it be injury or recruiting misses or depth chart issues or whatever, we're not getting it done. And some of that is on the coordinators and the coaches. But I don't know. Again, like I said, I'm not smart enough to tell you the nuance of that.
I'm not smart enough to tell you the answers either. But I think right now we have the system that we have for this year, right?
Yep.
You can't put a new offense in
100%.
In the middle of a season, right?
100%.
So we have to focus on getting better at what we do now. That's the only way that we're going to improve this year.
Yep.
And, you know, I think if the injury situation gets better, you would expect this offense to improve, not drastically, but to the level that they were at last year, I'd say.
To the level that we can at least win games. If we don't improve from here or we improve very little, we are in jeopardy with how good some of the Purdue. I mean, Charlie Jones.
If we play offense like we played the last two games, we're not going to a bowl game.
We're not going to a bowl game. That's. And we can talk about that as we get closer to that actually being a factor. But I mean, I saw a stat that Charlie Jones is about 30 yards shy of Iowa's total offense right now by himself through two games. That's not good. And obviously, we're going to have to play Purdue. That could be an ugly day. We just watched Michigan, talked about your bet against Hawaii, slap Hawaii around. Michigan could be an ugly day. Ohio State could be an ugly day. Minnesota, talk about stats. And I know they've played dog shit teams too. They are number one in the country in total defense right now, giving up the least yards per game at 142.5. They're also number one in the country in total offense. They're number one in both.
Yeah, slapdick teams, but you know they're doing what you're supposed to do with slapdick teams is you treat them like they're slapdick teams and you beat the shit out of them.
Minnesota's got almost 1,200 yards through two games offensively, and I get it. Now, interesting, as we so and I'm just mentioning Purdue and Minnesota because those are teams in the West that we're going to have to go through. Now, another team we're going to have to go through could be the most electrifying, both bittersweet, high-low, sweet and sour game of the year is the Iowa-Nebraska game. They no longer have a head coach. Scott Frost is out. Second on that total offense list, Kevin, is Georgia Southern, who played Nebraska last night. They put up a record amount of offensive yards in Memorial Stadium all time. And Frost is done.
Wait, all time, like including every game that Nebraska has played there or away teams?
Every game that's ever been played in Memorial Stadium, the amount of yards that Georgia Southern put up last night was the record in that.
Oh my gosh. That is not good to have an opposing team with a record in your stadium.
642 offensive yards, I think it was.
That is disgusting.
So just to smile a little bit and get a kick out of this, we've been talking about Frost getting axed for a long time. It finally happened today. And Kev, they were 3 weeks to the day from his buyout getting cut in half and saving $7.5 million. And they didn't do it. They didn't wait. They said, fuck it. We've got all the money we need. We're going to drop him now, make a statement and go get somebody else.
That's when, you know, some booster just has fuck you money.
Money.
Cause the university never pays those buyouts. It's always some boosters like, you know, I'll agree to raise the money or pay the money myself. Let's get a new coach here. Some booster who's like, I am absolutely sick of this man.
I've got the money.
I've got the money. I want him gone.
Yeah. Engage the missile strike because it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Tough look for Nebraska. Defensively, they're giving up. Well, I guess they did all right in the first few games because they're not at the top of this list.
We got to have our man Searles back on.
Oh yeah, he's in shambles right now. Oh, Nebraska after three games now, Northwestern, North Dakota, and Southern Georgia or whatever. Out of 131, they are 125th in the country defense, giving up just shy of 500 yards. So they're in the defensive situation that we are offensively. So at least, you know, there's some sad people across the state board. I've heard Matt Campbell's name thrown around for that job. I've heard Urban Meyer's name thrown around. I've heard other names thrown around. I don't think they're going to get Matt Campbell. If I'm Matt Campbell, I'm staying in Ames best I can. I don't know who wants to go to Nebraska right now. I will say them throwing around that kind of dummy money, because the contract to whoever they sign is going to be moosive.
Yeah. And you know, with these buyouts, getting paid not to coach, these new coaching contracts, should have fucking gone into coaching, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, maybe we chose the wrong. If you can get paid 15 milli to stop coaching somewhere, hell. I mean, he just made more money in a day than 99.999% of people will make in their entire lifetime to not work. I mean, it doesn't work that way. He obviously demonstrated value, which built that contract in the first place, but still, that's wild. And we'll end on this, Kev. The saddest part is that now Nebraska has a chance to be, and that's good. It creates competitive games. It might bring back a little bit more of the rivalry, but fuck, man, it was great for them to be the laughing stock for the last 6 years.
It was, especially when they hailed him as the second coming of Christ over there.
He was set up for failure so much. He went undefeated at UCF and their golden goat quarterback, and then
he was going to be the Messiah over there.
I almost feel bad for him. Almost.
I feel actually so happy for the guy. Not that I care about him like at all, but I gotta imagine like this guy's life has probably been absolutely terrible for like the last 3 years.
Trash.
Like I said in an episode previously, like he for the last like 2.5 years, especially during the season in his like post-game pressers or like his pre-game pressers, the guy looks like he's perpetually coming off like a 42-hour bender at the casino, at the Riverboat Casino, where he's down in whiskeys and chain smoking cigs. He looks like, I bet if you would take like a side by side comparison,
yes,
picture day one, picture the day he got fired,
be like the president.
He's gonna look like the way that the presidents age throughout their presidency,
100%. And
like this guy needs like a year just to like get away from the sport of football and just like probably help out his mental health.
It was best demonstrated by the fact that when they went over to Ireland for that first game, and they were doing a bunch of media stuff, and one of the players that they interviewed said was talking about how bad he wanted to win for Scott Frost because he just wanted him to be happy again. That was his quote. The player said that.
Yeah.
I imagine when him and Trev Alberts had that conversation, to some extent, the weight was lifted off his shoulders. Like he could breathe again. Also, the $15 million check hitting the account is going to feel.
Yeah, that'll buy you some therapy sessions.
That'll buy him some therapy. You know, like if he a few days at the spa, maybe spend a month at the spa, hot tub, massage.
A lot of time spent meditating, some yoga.
Go on a retreat in the mountains.
Just a nice little holistic away from the X's and the O's.
Do some mushrooms like Aaron Rodgers did in the offseason.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's time to experiment with something. Set him free. The man's the been in a cage for the last 5 years. So
he's the Iowa offense needs to be set free. Hopefully Nevada can be some kind of stepping stone game here. It's one that we need.
This little confidence booster, if anything, man.
Confidence booster. If there's any solace in moving on from this loss from Iowa State, is that it doesn't affect the Big Ten record.
Oh, man.
I don't think that this team should be focused on winning the West right now. I think they should be.
Bro, we ain't even 1 week at a time. We are one practice session at a time. We have to be 5 minutes at a time. That 5 minute practice session and that.
Yeah.
That practice at a time. We have to be, you know, KF always shared the quote from, was it Nate Kading? I think.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's one step at a time. There is no big picture.
Yep.
We have to be so opposite of big, tiny picture, teeny tiny pixel pick of a picture at a time. Right.
They literally have to focus on, all right, we've got special teams meeting. Let's make this the best special teams meeting we've ever had. Okay. We've got punt walk. We've got to have the best punt walk we've ever had. Okay, now it's stretch. We're focused. Like, it's that small right now for them. And right. You're right. That's all we got. The beginning of this podcast, if you're watching this, it's on the Zoom and not the cool new setup we had because somehow I fucked that new setup up. Us trying to get on this podcast and tech issues we were having were about as frustrating as that game from Saturday. And Kevin and I both almost shit our pants before we got on this podcast as well. So, there was that. It's just been an absolutely sort of disheveled weekend around here. And Kevin and I will be here all season. Now, Kevin, his mental health as the season goes on might get drained. So who knows? It could just be solo Tyler by the end of the year. But I swear I will show up for y'all. We'll talk it out. We'll have therapy sessions. I hope that it doesn't have to be that way. But for now, that's episode 350. If you want to listen to Drake, Patreon.com/washedupwalkons. You'll hear his thoughts on DHT and our live show that we'll do on Tuesday. And other than that, that's all we got. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. Till then, peace.